Somebody mentioned the glare? Somebody mentioned the glare. Really? What, this here? This glare on the poster? No, it balances this light up here. Look, you got to have the glare in order to balance that light. That's a good point. I said yesterday I wasn't in the balance. I was in the imbalance. Ooh, you got a point there. I don't know what to say. Okay, I'm not that godlike yet, right? I have to have balance, so. Yes, God has balance, but the motion balances things. Right, one thing goes toward the other thing. Yeah, that's kind of a balance. All right. Anyway, I do what I can, as messy as it is. Martin Zender here, another edition of the Revelation series. I am loving it. I got to remind you here that all of these bowls, all of these particular judgments have to do with people's relationship with God, the divine relationship. We're out of the political section, which has to do with rule, has to do with more practical things, has to do with arrangements. Now we're talking about something more intimate to God, something more important to Him. And what is more important to Him than those things, than politics, is relationship. God embraced His relationship with Adam in the garden. We say, well, that was really tough when that fellowship was dissolved there in the Garden of Eden. Yes, and it was not only tough on Adam and Eve, it's tough on us. It's tough on, that's obvious. It's tough on God, if I can speak in a figure. It is. God loves fellowship. That's why He created everything, in order to have fellowship. Why did all these beings come into being? You know, you swat at the insects. It's summer almost as I speak, and people swatted. Or is it summer? Yeah, it is? Oh, okay, great. People swatted insects, flies, and mosquitoes. And it's like, why do they have to be so many of them? Down here, people, you step on cockroaches. Why do there have to be so many of them? This is why. Because these are part of the creation that God created to eventually fellowship with Him. That's right. The cockroaches, the flies, and the mosquitoes will be transformed by the power of God, and all creation will be in subjection. And they're not in subjection now. If you've ever chased a fly with a fly swatter, as I'm sure you have, the fly is not in subjection. By the way, I read years ago in Reader's Digest how to kill a fly when it's sitting on a table. You have to outsmart the fly because they're faster than you. So your brain is faster than theirs, hopefully. So this is what you do. If a fly lands, like say on, say a fly lands on top of this microphone, and what you want to do is you don't want to try to get it directly. You have to go behind the fly and like 2 inches up and then clap your hands, because the fly takes off backwards. People don't know this. Flies take off backwards. Scientists have studied this. And they take off backwards and up. So you get your hands like a couple inches behind the fly and above the fly. And then you clap your hands and the fly will fly right into your clutches. And then, of course, you have fly guts on your hands. That's another problem. You'll have to solve things from there. So even the insects are going to one day be with God. So this fellowship is important to Him. And so, again, He is bringing these trials to Israel to eventually cause them to embrace Him and love Him. This is why the law came. Like, if a human did this, okay, we can't justify human beings. Like, I'm going to set a fire at my girlfriend's house so she can come over to my house and love me. See, we can't do that. Human beings can't do it. But this is God's way, and it's the best way, or else God wouldn't do it this way. So He sets a fire, in a manner of speaking, the law, and nobody can do the law. Romans 8:3, what was impossible to the law, in that it was infirm through the flesh, did God, sending His own Son. So now we go toward Him because of the law. So, because of the impossibility of being able to do the law. So now we have circumstances created by God. You ever heard of the tribulation referred to as circumstances? We have circumstances that are bringing people toward God. And the bowls are more severe than the thunders. and then the seals and the trumpets, even more severe. This is going to seem counterintuitive. They're more severe because God's fellowship with humanity is more important to him than political alignments. I'll say that again. God's fellowship with humanity is more important to him than political alignments. Therefore, this necessitates, because it's so important, because it's so vital, it necessitates harsher judgments. Because the harsher judgments, here's the inequality again, is going to push this thing so tightly together, tighter than it has ever been. Don't families come together on the heels of tragedy? People come together at funerals. People you've never seen before in your family will gather together to strengthen the bereaved. And this is God's ultimate goal, is fellowship. He's ferocious, think of it this way, for fellowship. He's ferocious for it. He wants it. He needs it. So look at these bowls as God's ferociousness, not to wreak destruction, again, look through the process, but to bring fellowship to himself. Why the bowls? Again, I mentioned this before, but bowls were used in the temple service. That's why. The King James, again, translates it in a funny way, maybe vials, I don't know. But it's human religion that is headed up in the wild beast and the false woman of Babylon. They're the ones who receive the most fearful of God's visitations because they're what God cares about the most. Does that make sense? It's like with your kids, you have to pick your battles, right? The battles that are more important to you. It's like, hey, your kid puts gum under the table or whatever. I don't know. You don't get too upset about that. But then, you know, your kid steals gum from the store. So that's when you come down with the most severe penalties. Why? The severity is equal to how much it matters to you. So by this we can see that worship really matters to God, the relationship. And it makes him happy, and reciprocally it makes us happy to be worshiping him. Which one of the animals gave the messengers the bowls? An animal, don't make me go back and look at the passage. I don't want to go back. One of the animals at the throne, we talked about that way back in the beginning, gave the messengers bowls. It's just a nice little detail. It will impress your friends at Bible studies if you can say, I believe it was the vulture that gave the messengers the bows. There's four animals at the throne of God. One has the face of a man. One has the face of a vulture. One has the face of a calf. One has the face of a lion. One has the face of Philistiller. Oh, wait, that's five. No, that's forget that last part. It's not the man. It's not the lion. Lion is regal. The lion's not going to stoop to anything like this. The man represents those who are undergoing these judgments. The calf, that's the workhorse. That represents the domestic and the domesticated animals. The vulture is the perfect choice here because a vulture is a scavenger of death. And so this is a rather distasteful task. And so the vulture says, I'll do it. I'm equal to it. I'm a distasteful creature. I eat dead things, so why not send me to give the bowls to the messengers? And so the vulture is the one that does it. So that's happy news. There can be little doubt that the seven trumpets are due to the opening of the seven seals. Remember that? The seventh seal opened and the seven trumpets were sounded. So they came out of it. But these bowls are so different and they're so distant and distinct from the trumpets that I don't think we can say, and we're not going to say, and I'm not going to allow us to say, that these bowls are somehow an extension of the trumpets. Another reason for that is that the trumpets and the seals and the thunders had to do, again, with the political redemption of the earth. We're not looking at the political redemption of the earth. We're looking at the religious redemption. We're not looking at rule. We're looking at worship. So we have different objects in view here. Good to know. Now, the first bowl, again, picking up on some loose ends here. The first bowl is a fulfillment of this threat that the worshipers of the wild beast will have no rest day and night, those who get the emblem of its name. God makes good on his threats. He always does. He always will. the body of the worshipers is transformed into a loathsome fountain of corruption, the sores. Job was afflicted with these kinds of sores. If you look at the book of Job, as soon as when these sores come upon him, I mean, that was just one of the many terrible trials that afflicted Job. He cursed the day he was born and he lamented his very existence. That's a serious affliction on the flesh. And it just shows you really how fragile we are. It always stuns me and shocks me and really scares me a little bit of how fragile humanity really is. It doesn't take much to take us from flying high to having a good day to having a bad day. It takes one phone call, one accident, one misfortune. And yet we find ourselves experiencing series after series of misfortune. But God tempers this with good things. But you can see that with this affliction on the skin, it's a direct infliction. This is the first bowl, the infliction of the first bowl, which is the sores, malignant sores. This afflicts only the worshipers of the wild beast. We have to be particular here. We have to look specifically at what is concentrated and what is worldwide. I think we'll find, this is just me now, but as we look at the bowls here, I think we'll find that as the bowls are poured in sequence, that the scope of the afflictions becomes wider. You can't escape this. This will undoubtedly be, to those afflicted, the hand of God. That's the difference between these bowls and these other afflictions that have gone before. We may have had a bad spell of weather. No. Maybe it's due to some virus that somebody brought over from another country. No, this will be discerned as the hand of God. The worshipers of the wild beasts are going to be hounded and bombarded from this point on by God. That's why this stuff, you can't even say this is that in the last 3.5 years. This is a great point, and I'm going to end with this. I have to admit, if it's a great point, I'm just going to admit it. I'm not going to be shy. It is, we like to say that, oh, the worst of the trials will come after the 3.5 years. I mean, after the middle of the 7 years, which is the beginning of the last 3.5 years. And that's true. Except for this. These bowls are not only at the last 3.5 years, but I think they're at the last part of the 3.5 years, which to me just reminds me again, and I tell you this again, that God is quick in his afflictions and lingering in his blessings. Hard to believe, I know, but we thought that even trading 7 years in for 1,000 years of bliss is a good investment. We're going to invest 7 years, we're going to get 1,000 years. We can legitimately reduce that to 3.5. So that's double the return on your investment if you're going to take that time and have it. 3.5. And how much better is it yet that it's only at the tail end of that 3.5 years where the sorest of afflictions come? And again, they come on the devotees, the worshipers of the wild beast, because that's where God's jealousy is divine. Number one commandment for Israel, thou shalt have no other gods before me. It was for his sake as well as for theirs. What do their gods do? Their gods will afflict them for eternity. Their gods will be indiscriminate as far as how that God causes them to suffer. This God loves you. This God is true. This God is righteous. He may afflict you, according to you, more than your false deities ever did, but it is concentrated, it is with purpose, and it is for the goal of returning you to him so that you may be happy, happily delivered of your angst, happily delivered of your the weight you've been carrying on your own head to perform, to meet others' expectations, that's all going to be gone. You know how it is. When you get sick, you don't care anymore. When you get sick, you don't dress. You just lay in bed. You groan. You don't care how you look. Finally, it's a bit of a relief, isn't it? Some people, when they get sick, it's like, it's like a vacation. It's like a vacation. I'm not saying it's good to get sick. I'm talking about a temporary illness, because I'm comparing it to God's temporary inflictions upon Israel. Let's say when you were a kid, you got sick, you got to stay home from school, you didn't have to work, your mom came in and gave you chicken noodle soup and popsicles. At least I'm speaking from my experience. So this has a salutary effect. It does. It's especially good, it's only good, if you realize that it has a termination. It's not going to go on forever. It has a purpose, and the purpose is to bring a disquieted creation in worship to God's feet.